It's great to be with you this morning, both here in the building and for those joining us online today. It's really good to be here. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Pete, and I'm married to Lisa, who's sitting over there next to a bucket. She's replaced me very quickly. not Gillian, sorry, the actual bin that's next to Lisa, because there's a drip. he's called Marcus. So, yeah, let's carry on down the row. I was determined to take this seriously this morning. So myself and Lisa, along with our four kids, we are lucky that for the past 13 or so years to have called Life Church our home. And it's really wonderful to be here sharing with you this morning. And it's been a while since I've preached. I think the last time was actually during lockdown when we were doing everything online. So I was just speaking into my iPad. So it's nice to be here back in the flesh. And talking of flesh, we're going to be looking at earthy things today, at physical things today. We'll be looking at creation. See, the title of this talk is Creation Cares. The physical world around us, and how we're encouraged to relate to it. And it's really funny this morning, isn't it, that just as like we come to talk about creation, we've got literally like a biblical deluge happening outside, although it seems to have calmed down now. Lisa, when I walked the last bit of the journey to church this morning, because Lisa was dropping our daughter Macy off to work in Fradley, and I got absolutely soaked. So I was thinking, thank you, creation. Thank you for caring for me. and now I'm speaking to you with damp jeans, so it's that which is always nice. So we're going to be talking about the physical world around us and our relationship with it, and how we're called to care for it as children of the Creator, just as it cares for us. How we're called to care for it as followers of Jesus Christ. And just in relation to Jesus, the opening verses of John's Gospel say that all things were made through Jesus, and without him, nothing was made, absolutely nothing was made that has been made. So as well as Jesus being the Son of Man who physically walked the earth 2,000 years ago, the Bible also talks about this cosmic Jesus, this cosmic Christ, who is the life force that has sustained the universe for 13.7 billion years. So there's been this love relationship, this life-giving, sustaining relationship between Jesus and creation going back billions and billions of years, including just the last few million years where there's been evidence of human life, which is where we come in. So I'm going to split this morning into three short chunks. I'm just going to share a few reflections on creation and our relationship with it and how God sees things. Then I'm going to ask Rebecca to come up onto the stage, and we're going to talk about how creation impacts her work in psychotherapy, which I think is probably going to be the best part of this talk, but we'll see. And then I'm just going to share a few closing thoughts on how we can take things forward. So, to start with, let's go right back to the first couple of chapters in the Bible, Genesis chapter 2. There's two creation stories at the start of Genesis. There's Genesis 1, and then it carries on with a sort of fresh creation story in Genesis 2, and they're both subtly different. Genesis, this is a key verse in Genesis 2. The Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. Now, another Bible translation says that God put man in the garden to till it and to keep it. So we're told that Adam and Eve, man and woman, humankind, were given the job of taking care of the earth, of keeping the earth and protecting and preserving it, of helping it to flourish and nurturing it. Now this verse is interesting because it's got a slightly different emphasis to the first creation story in the first chapter of creation, which is more often the one that we hear quoted. And in the first chapter of Genesis, which is not going to come up on the screen, humans are urged to subdue the earth and to rule over it or have dominion over it. And these verses in Genesis chapter 1 have been used to back up all types of plundering and pillaging of the earth in the years that have followed right up to the present day. And so the earth has been mistakenly seen as our property to rule, to dominate, to milk for all its worth, to strip its resources and to plunder. But as the kinder words upon the screen from Genesis 2 confirm, this dominion-type language is a misreading of God's original and ongoing intention for humanity in both chapters of Genesis. If we go back to Genesis 1, we're called to rule over creation, the Bible says, in the same way that sun and moon are called to rule over the day and night, in a pattern, in a rhythm that brings life and light. Our primary role has always been to humbly take care of and keep the world around us, working in harmony with it, not against it. So how's that going? You can imagine God with his head in his hands saying, I gave you just one job. Just one job. We don't need to be a scientist to see how humanity, or how man, and it is often man that has plundered the earth, has handled this. Whether it's the floods, the recent floods in Pakistan, or the droughts in East Africa that we've had over the last few years, whether it's the melting of the North and South Poles that David Attenborough so eloquently and painfully keeps showing us on television, or the hottest temperatures that we've had on record in the UK this summer just a few months ago, you know, things aren't getting any better, to say the least. The World Wildlife Fund said in 2020 in its Living Planet report that 68%, over two-thirds of the world's wildlife populations have declined just in my lifetime since the 1970s due to overconsumption, population growth, and intensive farming. And it concludes with these words: the findings are clear, our relationship with nature is broken. Now, scientists tell us that we are now in the Anthropocene age. That's Anthropocene, I probably said that wrong. But this age is the first age in the whole of human history, or the world's history, where human activity has become the dominant force in shaping the Earth's climate, stretching right back to the Industrial Revolution, maybe before that, and then right back up to the present day today. Our relationship with nature is broken. I'm sorry if this isn't the motivational sermon that you expected on Sunday morning, but I'm just going to make things a little bit worse before they get better. So our relationship with nature is broken, but not all humans are equally responsible for the devastating forces that are shaping the Earth's present state. It's people like me that are disproportionately responsible for it. I mean, talking of overpopulation, I've produced four children, so that's one tick in the box. Well, with a bit of help from Lisa, obviously. And you know, most of us take basic things for granted, like flying on a plane for our holidays, but the majority of the world's population, around 80 to 90% of the world's population, have never even stepped on a plane. So I'm one of the 10% of people that have, just this summer for a holiday, in fact. And it's the people and communities who have caused the least damage to the planet in places like Pakistan and East Africa who are the ones who are most likely to suffer from the damage that humans like me are causing. So that's pretty sober news. And I don't think God wants us to put a silver cloud on that lining. I think he wants us to be aware of the impact that we are having on creation. But there's this great verse from Ecclesiastes chapter 1 in the Old Testament, which does bring some hope. It says, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. Now, the earth is not going to collapse and pack up. It is remarkably resilient. The issue is that if things continue as they are, and we know this because we're told it repeatedly, it's just really hard to hear, the earth will no longer be able to support life, including human life, as it does now, as it has done for millions of years. And if I think about this too much, which I try not to, because of the implications it has for my life, I do find it quite heartbreaking, actually, that God has given us this creation, this gift to us, this world around us, to enable us to flourish and grow in partnership with it. But we, as humanity, seem determined to remove creation's capacity to support this flourishing of life as the Creator intended. And yet still the earth is remarkably resilient, and it keeps giving to us in love every single day. And so now I'm going to ask Rebecca just to come up, and we're going to share how she's experienced the way that the earth can care for us, that creation can care for us. So I'm just going to ask Rebecca a few questions. And if we can have the first slide, yes. So do you want to read that one out? Do you want to take this one?
Sure. So Pete asked me, kind of, you know, my name's Rebecca. I'm a psychotherapist, and I work outdoors. But you know, what is psychotherapy? So psychotherapy is the use of psychological methods, particularly when based on a regular personal interaction, to help a person change behaviour, increase happiness, and overcome problems. So it's about really helping somebody to unpick their history, unpick what patterns, influences in their lives have led them to the often quite destructive patterns of behaviour and thinking and feeling that are in their current present form. And it's a privileged job. It really is. It's such a privilege to walk with people through some really dark questioning and exploration.
Brilliant. So, Rebecca, tell us a bit more about the sort of ecotherapy elements of this psychotherapy work that you do.
Okay, so I have a great privilege because this is my office. Nice. I get to walk with my clients or be outdoors with my clients, and it is just the best office in the world, really. We go outdoors, we walk, we sit, we explore the space around us. It's amazing because it offers a lot more than a therapy in a room can offer, really, from my perspective. We can use the body, we can use movement, we can use pace of movement. So if someone's finding something difficult, they tend to walk really fast and talk really fast because they don't want to face the thing that they're struggling with. So just by simply saying, oh, hang on, I'm really interested in that thing you're saying, can we just slow down? Or maybe let's even stop. And that really allows them to be, safely get in touch with what they're really feeling underneath it all. It is a beautiful space. You can see here, the day I went out this last week and took some photos, it was blue skies every day. But as you can see today, it's not always like that. And so one of the great things about doing outdoor therapy is that you go out in all weathers. I go out in all weathers. I offer that option to the client. We can go online if they prefer not to. But for them to know that I'm willing to walk out with them in their journey, whatever's going on, whether it's storming, snowing, sunny, that says a lot to the person that I'm working with. I've got a quote from one of my clients, which I'll just share with you. Having experience with indoor therapy, where I've sat across from a counsellor in a small room for an hour, the most immediate difference is the freedom of the outdoor experience. I would struggle to be as honest and candid about my thoughts and feelings as I am when I'm outside. There's a great deal to be said of standing out in the open, speaking your truth and feeling it leave you and be carried away. To also be moving, to be active and purposely walking through thoughts, encountering and leaving things during a session. This can change your outlook towards the amount of agency and power you have when facing problems. For me, outdoor therapy has been a groundbreaking experience.
So why do you think nature is so important, the outdoors is so important to these sessions? What specifically does it bring that you wouldn't get if you were sitting in a room together with someone, other than what you've just already said?
Yeah, there's loads. Nature's a playground, isn't it? There's so much out there. I've worked with clients outdoors, and I've had clients throwing sticks at trees, and there's material around us we can use in every interaction. You might come across pathways, and I often allow my clients to lead where they want to go. Do you want to be in the woodland area? Do you want to be in the open spaces? What are you drawn to today in this session? And what is it about being in the open that matters to you today? How's that helping you? So it really gives us a lot that we can use. It's a massive resource. There's so much we can, kind of locate yourself in the land. How does that tree represent something for you? And we can be really actively involved with the everything that's around us in the environment. One thing that a therapist often does is something called mirroring, where a client brings something, they're feeling something, and you're there to kind of help them experience that, mirror it back to them in some degree. And what I found is that actually nature does a lot of that for us. So for example, on the course I went on, someone talked about going down to the ocean when she was feeling raged, and the ocean was roaring with her, and she felt met in that moment in her emotion. And that's certainly the experience I've had myself and a lot of my clients have when we're out and about.
Are there any other specific examples of interactions where nature has helped a client that you can think of?
Yeah, definitely. So you move on to the next slide. I don't know if you can see this, but it's there's a massive tree that's laid on its side. So I remember walking through this particular bit of woodland with a client who was talking about some of the things that had happened in her life and how in that moment she was just feeling like the foundations, everything that she knew had shifted and changed. And we came across this tree and she just said, "That's how I feel. I feel completely uprooted. My roots have been ripped from my ground." And that just spoke into her moment, into her experience. Sometimes we can't find words for things and then nature gives us the words to express it. The next slide. This is a particular part of the woodland. It's what I find fascinating is that different parts of the area that I work in seem to lend themselves for different aspects of the work. But this is an area where there was a couple of paths that the client could choose to walk down, and that was one of the things we were looking at. She literally said, "Oh, I feel like I could either do this or I could do that." And we're like, "Well, let's walk that out. Let's see what that's like. Here are two paths. Which does this represent and which does that represent?" So this path represented for her a choice to be really rageful in this thing that she was talking about. So we started walking down that path. It was blue skies at the beginning. As she started talking about how she was feeling and how this, you know, these options were there for her, the wind starts picking up and bits from the trees start dropping down, rain starts, and then it turns to hail. And we're just like, this is ridiculous. We ended up retreating back into a covered space, which was reflective of what she'd done in her, you know, psychological walk. She'd found herself feeling really angry, but couldn't cope with the emotion. So she'd retreated inside herself. And just walking that out showed her so much. Eventually, we had to move out of that space because time was coming to the end and we needed to get back to the car park. And said, "You know, which route do you want to take now?" And she said, "Well, we'll go the other route, please." And as we did, the weather calmed and the sun came out again. It was remarkable. We were laughing about it because we couldn't quite believe how much the mirroring was happening before us. I've recently been walking through with a client the end of life of her partner, a long-term partner. And, nature is seasons, isn't it? There's change. You know, we've been going through autumn, winter. And it, again, just has reflected so much for her about the seasons that she's walking through and that her partner's been walking through. He's died now and we're still working together, and there's glimpses of, you know, spring will come. There is hope beyond this season. And so nature gives us so much permission. You know, if we're in a stage where we need to drop things, you know, how much permission is there in autumn to drop our leaves and take some time just to rest? It gives us so much. Beautiful beech tree. This really spoke to one client around them being very much the tree in their family, the solid one in their family, and not being able to, you know, have their own grief, their own emotion, because everybody else is leaning in on them. And we could literally go to this tree and lean on it. She felt what it was like just to lean and rest and experience what she needed to feel. And that just was a really significant moment for her.
I'm sure there's loads of other examples you could share as well. But yeah. How can we, Rebecca, appreciate nature ourselves and engage with it in our everyday lives? How would you recommend that we do that or try that?
I love these two trees here. It speaks so much for me. I often go down this path. But the two trees kind of overlap and interact with each other. And the one thing I think I've gained from the course that I've been doing with this and my experience in it is that we are alongside nature. We are equal with nature. We are cared for by nature. What we've done over generations is get further and further away from it. We live in houses that keep us more and more protected from nature. We drive in cars. We're in, you know, we're separate from. And I think we could look at, you know, the stats and the struggles, climate change, and be really frightened, couldn't we? And feel a duty and a guilt to do something, to act. But maybe instead of that, maybe we need to get amongst nature, be in nature and develop a relationship with creation. And then from that space, think about how we care. And it's a relationship then. Nature cares for us, creation cares for us, and what can we give back?
That's brilliant. And these woods are only a few miles from here, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to go and explore them, then I'm sure Rebecca can tell you how to get there, but they're literally 2 or 3 miles away. So yeah. It is literally right on our doorsteps.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend, this is a Woodland Trust area, and they've got woods all over the country. They're doing an active job to preserve spaces like this. So go on Google. If you're travelling, go on Google, where's a Woodland Trust? And there's always somewhere you can go and walk and be in natural spaces.
Brilliant. Thank you, Rebecca. That was really great. So I spoke a bit earlier, before Rebecca, about our God-given role to care for creation and how we as humankind have struggled to do that. And Rebecca's just shown us the other side of the coin, that how creation actually cares for us, even when we fail to care for it. And there's a famous verse in 1 John chapter 4 which says, "We love because God first loved us." We love because God first loved us. And as we open our eyes to see how creation, how nature, how the earth cares for us, how it sustains us, how God has ordained it to love us, this can spur us to love and care for creation in return. We can love it because it first loved us. This is a really good, if slightly long, quote from a couple of theologians. When we embrace creation, the poor, our enemies, strangers, foreigners, outcasts, and others, we desire justice for them. We welcome them without judging. We love our neighbours as ourselves. We reflect the justice, love, and hospitality of God. This hospitality leads us to desire and to work for the flourishing, well-being, and good of others. When we make plans, we usually consider those that we love. When I make plans to go on holiday or to cook a meal, I think about how this might affect my family. Will it give them food poisoning, etc., etc.? Will they like the place that we're going to go to? Will they like the meal that I'm going to prepare? Will it satisfy them? Will it be good for them? Will it be good for their health? This is normal and natural, and this is because I want the best most of the time for those that I love. And maybe we could begin to think like this with creation when we're making our daily plans. How might this journey, this meal, this purchase affect the world created around me, affect my brothers and sisters on the other side of the planet, as well as the human ones that I love here and now? It's just a small shift in mindset, but it can be a significant and life-giving one, and a rewarding one too, and it's just simply about being aware of what's around us. And it's not something that's expensive either. There's loads of affordable ways that we can do this. And maybe if we are out of the habit, as I guess many of us during lockdown we did this, but maybe we've got out of the habit now, we could plan a rendezvous with nature. We could go for a walk, we could grow something, whether inside or outside the house. We could just spend some time outside at night looking at the stars. Just do the things that we used to do when we were kids, maybe. And the reason for that is because God is there. God is here. He's waiting to meet with us in his creation gift to us. And there's such a massive part of God's character that's revealed through creation that we miss out on if we don't just stop and enjoy it. So we can work together with God. We can take care of God's world as it takes care of us. And I'm just going to finish now with a poem from a famous poet who died recently called Mary Oliver. It's called When I Am Among the Trees. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. It's simple, they say, And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine.